Chapter 11. Persistence. I would like to call your attention to a principle that I believe to be the factor, more than any other, which determines whether one succeeds or fails in any calling. The principle may be described as the faith and persistence to accept defeat as being nothing more than an experience from which something of value may be learned. Most people give up or let their ambition be killed when serious obstacles are met. It has been my privilege during my public career to know many men and women of great achievement, and all of them had met with opposition that necessitated struggle and persistence. Life is filled with obstacles that must be overcome. Only those who have the stamina and the willingness to fight can win. Everyone meets with opposition. Opposition should be accepted as a signal to put everything you have into its mastery. When defeat comes, as it will, accept it as a hurdle that has been placed in your way for the purpose of training you to jump higher. You will gain strength and skill from each hurdle that you surmount. Do not hate people because they oppose you. Thank them for forcing you to develop the strategy and imagination you will need to master their opposition. This is a beautiful world, and life is stocked with an abundance of everything you need, including riches and happiness. Accept both the bitter and the sweet. Success without defeat would lead to boredom. Defeat without the counteracting effect of success would kill ambition. Be willing to accept your position of each. Every failure will teach you a lesson that you need to learn if you will keep your eyes and ears open and be willing to be taught. Every adversity is usually a blessing in disguise. Without reverses and temporary defeat, you would never know just how good you are. 3 feet from gold. One of the most common causes of failure is the habit of quitting when you are overtaken by temporary defeat. Every person is guilty of this mistake at one time or another. During the gold rush days, an uncle of R.U. Darby was caught by gold fever, and he went west to Colorado to dig and grow rich. He had never heard that more gold had been mined from the thoughts of men than has ever been taken from the earth. He staked a claim and went to work with pick and shovel. After weeks of labor, he was rewarded with the discovery of the shining ore, but he needed machinery to bring the ore to the surface. Quietly, he covered up the mine and returned to his home in Williamsburg, Maryland. He told his relatives and a few neighbors about the strike. They got together the money for the machinery and then had it shipped. My friend R.U. Darby decided to join his uncle and they went back to work the mine. The first car of ore was mined and shipped to a smelter. The returns proved they had one of the richest mines in Colorado. A few more cars of ore would clear their debts. Then would come the big killing in profits. Down went the drills. Up went the hopes of Darby and Uncle. Then something happened. The vein of gold ore disappeared. They had come to the end of the rainbow, and the pot of gold was no longer there. They drilled on, desperately trying to pick up the vein again, all to no avail. Finally, they decided to quit. They sold the machinery to a junk man for a few $100s and took the train back home. The junk man called in a mining engineer to look at the mine and do a little calculating. The engineer advised that the project had failed because the owners were not familiar with fault lines. His calculations showed that the vein would be found just 3 feet from where the Darbys had stopped drilling, and that is exactly where it was found. The junk man took millions of dollars in ore from the mine because he knew enough to seek expert counsel before giving up. Long afterward, Mr. Darby recouped his loss many times over when he made the discovery that desire can be transmuted into gold. The discovery came after he went into the business of selling life insurance. Never forgetting that he lost a huge fortune because he stopped 3 feet from gold, Darby profited by the experience in his newly chosen field. He said to himself, "I stopped 3 feet from gold, but I will never stop because men say no when I ask them to buy insurance." He became one of a small group who sell over $1 million in life insurance annually. He owed his stickability to the lesson he learned from his quitability in the gold mining business. Shortly after Mr. Darby received his degree from the University of Hard Knocks, he witnessed something that proved to him that no doesn't necessarily mean no. One afternoon, he was helping his uncle grind wheat in an old-fashioned mill. The uncle operated a large farm on which a number of sharecropper farmers lived. Quietly, the door opened, and a small child, the daughter of a tenant, walked in and took her place near the door. The uncle looked up, saw the child, and barked at her roughly, "What do you want?" Meekly, the child replied, "My mom says to send her 50 cents." "I'll not do it," the uncle retorted. "Now you run on home." But she did not move. The uncle went ahead with his work, not noticing that she did not leave. When he looked up again and saw her still standing there, he said, "I told you to go home. Now go, or I'll take a switch to you." She did not budge. The uncle dropped a sack of grain he was about to pour into the mill hopper and started toward the child. Darby held his breath. He knew his uncle had a fierce temper. When the uncle reached the spot where the child was standing, she quickly came forward one step, looked up into his eyes, and screamed at the top of her voice, "My mama's gotta have that 50 cents!" The uncle stopped, looked at her for a minute, put his hand in his pocket, took out $0.50 and gave it to her. The child took the money and slowly backed toward the door, never taking her eyes off the man whom she had just conquered. After she had gone, the uncle sat down on a box and looked out the window into space for more than 10 minutes. He was pondering with awe over the whipping he had just taken. Mr. Darby was also doing some thinking. That was the first time in all his experience that he had seen a child deliberately master an adult. How did she do it? What happened to his uncle that caused him to lose his fierceness and become as docile as a lamb? What strange power did this child use that made her master of the situation? Strangely, the story of this unusual experience was told to me in the old mill on the very spot where the uncle took his whipping. As we stood there in that musty old mill, Mr. Darby repeated the story and finished by asking, "What can you make of it? What strange power did that child use that so completely whipped my uncle?" Then he mentally retraced his 30 years as a life insurance salesman. As he did so, it became clear that his success was due in no small degree to the lesson he had learned from that child. Mr. Darby pointed out, "Every time a prospect tried to bow me out without buying, I saw that child standing there in the old mill, her big eyes glaring in defiance, and I said to myself, I've got to make this sale. The better portion of all sales I have made were made after people had said no." Before success comes in anyone's life, that person is sure to meet with much temporary defeat and perhaps some failure. When defeat overtakes a person, the easiest and most logical thing to do is to quit. That is exactly what the majority of people do. More than 500 of the most successful people this country has ever known told me their greatest success came just one step beyond the point at which defeat had overtaken them. Failure is a trickster with a keen sense of irony and cunning. It takes great delight in tripping you just when success is almost within reach. One of the best examples of finding the seed of an equivalent benefit in failure is the story of a man of whom you may have heard, and I have no doubt that you've eaten some of the food he produced and marketed throughout the nation as the result of an adversity which would have stopped most men cold. The man was Milo C. Jones, who owned a farm near Fort Atkinson, Wisconsin. Although he was a hard worker and his physical health was good, he seemed unable to make his small farm yield more than the bare necessities of life. Then he suffered a stroke and was stricken down with double paralysis, which deprived him of the use of every portion of his body except his brain. He was put to bed by his relatives, who believed him to be a helpless invalid. For weeks he remained unable to move a single muscle. All he had left was his mind, the one great power he had drawn upon so rarely because he had earned his living by the use of his brawn. Out of this sheer necessity, he discovered the power of his mind and began to draw upon it. Jones called his family together and told them, "I can no longer work with my hands, so I have decided to work with my mind. The rest of you will have to take the place of my hands." In this hour of his greatest adversity, Milo C. Jones used his mind, took possession of it for the first time in his life, perhaps, and out of that mind came the idea that would yield him a huge fortune. He told his assembled family that this year they were going to start planting every acre of the farm they could spare in corn, then start raising pigs with that corn, slaughter the pigs while they are young and tender, and convert them into sausage. The family went to work, and in a few years, the trade name of Jones Little Pig Sausages became a household byword throughout the nation. Jones was the first to raise hogs specifically for producing premium sausage. Prior to this innovation, sausage had always been thought of as a byproduct. The Jones Company was also the first in its field to rely heavily on mail order sales and on an aggressive national advertising program to promote its products. Milo C. Jones lived to see himself earn a multi-million dollar fortune from the same farm which, previous to his misfortune, had yielded him only a scant living. Isn't it strange that so often people have to be cut down by failure and defeat before they learn they have minds capable of mastering all of their problems? Isn't it strange that Jones did not discover the little pig sausage idea while he had a sound body? Take your own persistence inventory. Persistence is a state of mind. Therefore, it can be cultivated. Like all states of mind, persistence is based upon definite causes, among them these. 1. Definiteness of purpose. Knowing what you want is the first and most important step toward the development of persistence. A strong motive will force you to surmount difficulties. 2. Desire. It is comparatively easy to acquire and maintain persistence in pursuing the object of intense desire. 3. Self-reliance. Belief in your ability to carry out a plan encourages you to follow the plan through with persistence. Self-reliance can be developed through the principle described in the chapter on autosuggestion. 4. Definiteness of plans. Organized plans, even ones that may be weak or impractical, encourage persistence. 5. Accurate knowledge. Knowing that your plans are sound, based upon experience or observation, encourages persistence. Guessing instead of knowing destroys persistence. 6. Cooperation. Sympathy, understanding, and cooperation with others tend to develop persistence. 7. Willpower. The habit of concentrating your thoughts on making plans to attain your definite purpose leads to persistence. 8. Habit. Persistence is the direct result of habit. The mind absorbs and becomes a part of the daily experiences upon which it feeds. Fear, the worst of all enemies, can be overcome by forcing yourself to perform and repeat acts of courage. Take inventory of yourself and determine what you are lacking in this essential quality of persistence. Measure yourself point by point and see how many of the previous 8 factors of persistence you lack. This analysis may lead to discoveries that will give you a new understanding of yourself and what you need to get ahead. Bad habits to overcome. The following is a list of the real enemies that stand between you and achievement. These are not only the symptoms indicating weakness of persistence, but also the deeply seated subconscious causes of this weakness. Study the list carefully and face yourself squarely if you really wish to know who you are and what you are capable of doing. These are the weaknesses that must be mastered by anyone who really wants to accumulate riches. 1. Failure to recognize and to define clearly exactly what you want. 2. Procrastination, with or without cause. usually backed up with a long list of alibis and excuses. 3. Lack of interest in acquiring specialized knowledge. 4. Indecision and the habit of passing the buck instead of facing issues squarely, also backed by alibis and excuses. 5. The habit of relying upon excuses instead of making definite plans to solve your problems. 6. Self-satisfaction, for which there is little remedy and no hope for those who suffer from it. 7. Indifference, usually reflected in your readiness to compromise rather than meet opposition and fight it. 8. The habit of blaming others for your mistakes and accepting circumstances as being unavoidable. 9. Weakness of desire because you neglected to choose motives that will push you to take action. 10. Willingness to quit at the first sign of defeat, based upon one or more of the 6 basic fears. 11. Lack of organized plans you have written out so they can be analyzed. 12. The habit of neglecting to act on ideas or to grasp opportunity when it presents itself. 13. Wishing instead of willing. 14. The habit of compromising with poverty instead of aiming at riches, a general lack of ambition to be, to do, or to own. 15. Searching for all the shortcuts to riches, trying to get without giving a fair equivalent, usually reflected in the habit of gambling or trying to drive unfair bargains. 16. Fear of criticism, resulting in failure to create plans and put them into action because of what other people might think, do, or say. This is one of your most dangerous enemies because it often exists in your subconscious mind, and you may not even know it is there.